Find Your Strengths, Fund Your Strengths. Fit for Growth, the new book from PwC's Strategy And, explains how organizations can cut costs and grow stronger at the same time. Learn more about Strategy And's proven Fit for Growth approach at strategyand.pwc.com. Welcome to the HBR IdeaCast from Harvard Business Review. I'm Sarah Green Carmichael. Today, I'm talking with Tomas Chamorro-Pamuzic, the CEO of Hogan Assessments and professor of business psychology at University College London and Columbia University. He's also a regular contributor to HBR. Tomas, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's my pleasure.
So for several years now, the coaching industry has really focused on this idea of developing your strengths. So this is the idea that instead of looking to shore up your weaknesses, instead you find out what you're good at and you focus more on doing more of that. And this has gone over the last, I don't know, I'd say maybe 10 years from being counterintuitive to being somehow just the conventional wisdom. We all know we're supposed to focus on our strengths. But you have really raised some questions about that in a recent piece you wrote for HBR on HBR.org. The first criticism you pointed out was there's actually no scientific evidence that this approach works. So I thought we could just start there. Is it true that there's really no scientific evidence for this approach at all?
Well, you know, that's a question that has a very short answer, which is yes, it is true. So we could stop there, or, you know, I could waffle on for a little bit longer. I mean, the first thing to say is that there's some confusion over what people really mean when they talk about strengths-based coaching or strengths-based development intervention. I mean, if you understand this loosely, and what you mean is that it is wise to leverage a person's talents, skills, or assets to make them even better at what they're already good at, and maybe even find roles or jobs that are compatible with their inherent talents, I don't have anything against that. And, you know, there is a lot of evidence showing that to some degree, talent is really personality in the right place. That when you match people to environments or roles that are congruent with their skills, knowledge, and assets, they will do better. And, you know, that's almost so intuitive that it's pointless to discuss it. At the same time, if we really look at what's innovative and what was the controversial and original claim of the strengths movement 10 years ago, the idea that we might be better off ignoring our weaknesses or our faults, there really is no scientific evidence, by which I mean evidence, empirical evidence published in peer-reviewed journal articles that demonstrates the superiority of that method vis-a-vis coaching interventions that actually also take into account people's weaknesses.
Mm. Well, and one of the challenges that you have pointed out with that approach is that it could give people a false sense of competence or, you know, a sort of false belief in their skills if you only focus on their strengths. Explain a little bit what you mean by that.
Sure. You know, first, it's important to understand that even the smartest, brightest, and most brilliant individuals have a dark side. You know, they have certain elements of their personality, of their typical behaviors that are quite counterproductive. And that if those tendencies are left unchecked, no matter how smart, competent, and talented they are, their careers are at risk of derailing. Over the past 10 years, you know, very much since the strengths movement has been introduced and become so popular, there has been a lot of scientific evidence on the toxic effects of people's dark side, the whole area of counterproductive work behaviors and antisocial behaviors at work shows that it is often the most brilliant and talented people that engage in, you know, antisocial or counterproductive work behavior. So that's number one. So we are not good off or better off by ignoring potential derailers. But the second point, which is very important, is that the way that the strengths-based movement has approached their take on strengths is not by looking at normative data, not by looking at how good you are in comparison to your peers or your groups or any kind of a normative benchmark, but they evaluate strengths in comparison to each other. So to give you a very simple example, you know, let's assume that we're looking at how good a communicator you are, how hardworking you are, and how creative you are. Now, it might be that compared to a normative group or the average person in the population, you're actually quite weak in all of those things. Now, most tools and assessments designed to find your strengths would simply pick up the thing that you are best at. So I might tell you, Sarah, well, you know, you really are a communicator because you're even worse at the other two things. But that doesn't make your communication skills a strength. You really have three things that you should develop if you want to compete with others. So that's what I meant by giving people a false self, sense of security. Everybody has something that they are better at. But it might be that they're still not very good at that. And I think we benefit more from telling people that than from pretending those are strengths.
Well, and I think what you're saying there gets to the heart of what I think can be very uncomfortable for some managers, which is it's much more fun to deliver positive feedback than critical feedback, especially if it's really hard to find something positive to say. So like in that case, you might have to tell someone, listen, you don't really work very hard. You're not a very good communicator. You're not very good at managing your stress, you know, and you try to think of something nice to say to sort of balance it all out. But it's hard to kind of put some of that negative stuff out there and not be able to leaven it. So in a way, it's sort of more fun to focus on your strengths, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And it's not just more fun. It's also easier for the person. It might be more interesting and easier to focus on developing their strengths further. And certainly we know that there is usually a match between interests and talents. So most people are good at the things they enjoy and they enjoy the things they're good at. But what if those things are not really of interest to the organization? And what if coaches or practitioners, HR managers or leaders are only indulging in this approach because they don't have the courage, let's say, to give people the bad news and to tell them what they need to hear as opposed to what they want to hear. And we could take that even further and say that, you know, there might be in the world of coaching many people who even keep and retain their clients because they spend a great deal of time telling them what they want to hear and that they're great. And now that might have good short-term effect, but it's a populist approach that doesn't really help develop people to the next level of their careers.
Mm. Well, and, you know, you've also talked about the problems with, I mean, to follow up a little bit on the problems with the coaching industry and sort of populist approach, the strengths-based approach is one that I think does sell well and does, theoretically, people seem to apply it to everyone in their organization because everyone has something that they're better at than other things, whether or not they're objectively good at that thing at all. So in a way, you know, it seems like it's partly what you're contending with here is the popularity of this as a business, not so much as a theory that's been tested, but it seems like a product people want to buy.
Yes, and they want to buy it. And I think that much of this industry or this paradigm, if you like, has been evaluated just through face validity. You know, there's a lot of practitioners. I mean, in response to my recent blog, there have been a lot of readers who said, well, you know, I'm a certified strengths coach and I've been using it for a while and I find it brilliant and my clients love it. Well, you know, people also love a lot of things that are fairly unhealthy for them in the long run, but that doesn't mean that they're excellent and we should prescribe them. And certainly, you know, the burden of proof is on those who are claiming, as the strengths-based movement did in its original form, that focusing on people's faults and weaknesses is disadvantageous. Now, that really runs counter to the science. There are lots of meta-analytic studies and large-scale studies that show that coaching interventions, which also focus on tackling faults or weaknesses, in other words, helping people bridge or reduce the gap between their ideal self and their actual self, are effective, and they can improve behaviors and even trait-like dispositions by 30 or 40%.
This HBR IdeaCast is brought to you in part by Willis Towers Watson. Businesses spend about $100 billion a year on cybersecurity technology. But cybersecurity is as much about employee behaviors as it is about technology. At Willis Towers Watson, they decode the complexities of cybersecurity. They will look at risks across your company's people, capital, and technology, assessing your vulnerabilities, protecting your company with best-in-class solutions, and helping you recover quickly from future attacks. Learn more at willistowerswatson.com/ideacast. Well, I want to ask you a little bit about what happens when you focus on those weaknesses. But first, I want to ask, because I think so many weaknesses are overdeveloped strengths. What happens when you focus on your strengths too much, and in a way you sort of overdevelop them? I almost have in my mind like an image of a bodybuilder who has like all arms and no core strength. You know, what happens when you focus on one thing and develop it so much that it actually ends up becoming a weakness?
That's a great analogy, even though, and I'm not an expert on the subject, but I'm sure that good bodybuilders would claim that they aim to have a perfect harmony and to work on each and all of their muscles so that they are perfectly in proportion, you know, like a Greek or Roman statue. Now, in the realm of psychological qualities, skills, talents, etc., or if you want to use, you know, the popular term strengths, we can also think of how overused strengths may become weaknesses. I mean, think of an employee or an individual who is very driven and ambitious. If we develop their ambition or drive even further, they might just become greedy. Or somebody who is very socially skilled, if they develop their social skills even further, they might become almost Machiavellian and manipulative. People who are very creative can become odd and eccentric. And people who are already a little bit confident, if we make them even more confident, they might become arrogant or overconfident. And when you get to these extremes ends of any traits or dispositions, you can see how things that were positive qualities, strengths, or even career weapons start becoming liabilities.
Well, and then the flip side of that, right, is working on your strengths and working on those liabilities and actually trying to shore up the areas where you're weaker. How do you suggest that people go about doing that, and what should ideally happen if you do that successfully?
I think, you know, there is no universal formula that we can give other than a formula that is fairly, very simple. You know, somebody once said that models are either useful or accurate, but never both. You know, I think if we really tried to come up with a comprehensive, detailed model, it wouldn't be useful because it would be too complex. But there are really just three steps at any point in time. I think step number one, gain self-awareness, whether through a 360, a coach, a personality assessment, feedback from your subordinates, if you're a leader. I mean, ask them really what you're doing wrong and what you could be doing better. A lot of the times we don't request this type of feedback, and that generates positive feedback almost by default, because everybody tries to be civilized, kind, and nice in the workplace. And too many times, you know, whether you're a manager or an employee, you end up telling others that they're great and they're nice when in fact they're not, and that doesn't help them. So giving accurate feedback and requesting accurate feedback that also focuses on your potential faults and gaps is essential. The second step is to come up with pragmatic but useful goal setting program that targets specific behaviors that you need to change. And we're not looking here for a personality transplant. We're looking here for specific things that could make you more effective as a leader, as an employee. And the third step is just hard work. You know, there isn't any other recipe. I mean, persistence, drive, determination to achieve those goals. And then you repeat the feedback-seeking process to see whether the new 360 or the new feedback you get from others is more positive. And that will inevitably include some information or some level of feedback as to what you were not doing well in the first place. So have I improved, which inevitably means are my derailers or my toxic tendencies now in check?
So that was very useful. It may not have been complete, but I will agree with you that it was really useful. I'm wondering, you know, if you do want to do something with your strengths, is there something you can do with them that is okay, you know, in your view, or that the science would support, you know, whether that is improving them a little bit, but not focusing on them too much, or something else that you could do with them?
Absolutely. You know, I think the first thing is obviously to be absolutely sure that you have actually successfully identified your strengths. And again, you know, any definition of strengths or talent has to take into account the individual's position vis-a-vis a group or the organization. I mean, the question really is not what you're best at in comparison to your other skills or abilities, but what you're good at compared to everybody else in the world or an organization. Once you do that, then yes, to the degree that there is a clear link between your strengths and job performance and Even better if those are aligned with the goals of the organization. So don't just choose the things that you're interested in. Choose things that affect job performance and actually have a benefit for the organization. Then, yes, I mean, getting better at those things won't harm you. And the analogy we can use here is, I don't know, you can pick any sports you like, but I remember when Andy Roddick was working on improving his serve, even though his serve was already the killer weapon. Well, he got better at serving during his career, and yes, he ended up winning more points against Roger Federer and Nadal with his serve. But he really just started beating them when he also improved his backhand or his volley. So I think too often we think of things as either or and in categorical terms. And I understand that, you know, in today's world where people are deprived of attention and everything is short span and almost ADHD-like, it's easier to think in terms of either or and categorical terms. But there is no reason to state, and there is no evidence to state, that focusing only on your strengths while ignoring your weaknesses is a bad thing. And we shouldn't also assume that focusing only on your weaknesses will make you better. You should really try to do both.
Tomas, this has been a wonderful conversation and very helpful. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
It's a real pleasure, as always, Sarah. Thank you very much.
That was Tomas Chamorro-Primusic. He's a regular contributor to HBR, and you can find his essay on this topic and many more at hbr.org.